The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome in to the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light, our first show of 2019. We wish we were coming to you under better circumstances because the Bulls just got ran out of the gym by the Orlando Magic 112-84. And let me introduce my cohorts here on the Bulls Talk Podcast, Kendall Gill joining me and Kelly Krull joining us after just talking with players in the Bulls locker room. Kelly, let's start with you. I think that after getting 2 days off, the expectation of Jim Boylan was his guys would come out with fresh legs and really be ready for the challenge. But for whatever reason, they got behind early and seemed to kind of raise the white flag.
Yeah, they didn't play well from the very beginning. They talk a lot about winning that first quarter, and that didn't happen. And numerous times tonight, Orlando just had it going, and you know they came out, punched him in the face, and really the Bulls just could not find a way to respond tonight. And Jim said something interesting about the thing that disappointed him most was that they tried to do it ourselves. And I think that was just his way of saying each individual guy was trying to be the guy that brought them back into this game. And it just was a disaster on both ends of the floor. And that's really, I from how they've played this Orlando team in the past, I didn't really understand it. I didn't think Wendell Carter Jr. had a great game at all. And then he ends up playing just 13-28, and we can go into that later. But the body language was not good from the players afterwards. And I thought I don't want to say rehearsed in the locker room, but you heard a lot about we got to figure this out. We got to go back to the drawing board. We got to take step forwards. We got to communicate. Because I specifically followed up with Lauri Markkanen when he said we got to figure it out. I said, where does that begin? Mm-hmm. How does that start? And he's like, I think it just starts with communicating. And we got to do better.
Standard answer.
But you can, yeah, it is a standard
really
answer.
Anything.
And what that leads me to believe, though, at this point, is that they don't know. They're confused, and I don't know where the leader is in this locker room that's supposed to kind of galvanize and bring them together. And I know Jim is, you know, trying to continue to get them to buy into this, but it's hard to buy in when you're losing by 30 plus points to the Orlando Magic.
See, Kelly, and that's the most important part you said right there, leadership. This team is so young, they don't have a leader yet, because if they had a true leader on the team, that leader would not let them come in tonight and lose the way that they did tonight. At least it would have been a game. They would have been ready to play, especially with 2 days off. When I was captain of a team, I would always make sure that my teammates were ready to play if we had a day off. You know, I would ask the coach that we need to come in a little bit earlier than normal, you know, because we've had that day off, just to make sure that we were awake, our bodies were. Because I felt like these guys, the Bulls, were sleepwalking, you know, through the first half. The careless turnovers at the beginning of the game, which gave Orlando life, that's something that when you have leadership, that doesn't happen. And you need two or three guys that will hold everybody else accountable when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And the Bulls just don't – they're so young, they just don't have that right now.
Well, let's get right into the Wendell Carter situation. Very puzzling. He was 0 for 5 from the field. Obviously, Jim Boylan was not happy with what he was seeing for the number 7 overall pick in the draft. He sat him down and never went back to him in the second half. And he was asked very pointed questions in the post-game news conference in regard to why didn't you go back to him? And he basically just said, I didn't like what I was seeing. He felt it was a time for him to sit on the bench and reflect on what he had done wrong, observe the game and how he can make better use of his minutes. Again, that's coach speak, but doesn't that seem more like a high school or college move than it does a pro move?
And it goes back to pulling the whole starting five out in the first half and not letting them return and pulling them out in the second half and not letting them return. Maybe this is Jim Boylan's style, but I don't think that it's successful at the pro level. You have to give the guys an opportunity to at least come back and redeem themselves. I mean, that's how it's done. We, you know, there's these are grown men up here. These are not kids in college that are 17, 18, 19 years old. They get paid to do a job, and they want to earn their money. And if they have a series of plays where they don't do well or a half, then it's understandable that a coach will take them out. And this is how it should be done. Take the player out. Listen, you're not doing. You're not. Is that all you're gonna give me today? This is what Magic Johnson told me one time. When he takes his players out, or when he sees as the captain of the team, when he sees that his players are not playing well, he'll walk up to him. Is that all you're gonna give me today? And yeah. Then that puts something on their mind. As a coach, that's what I would say to a player. And I said, go sit down and think about it for a minute. I'm coming back to you. That's how you get players to run through walls for you, because they know that you're with them, okay? And then after a couple of minutes, he sits down and gets himself together. All right, go back in. And that's how you get the attention of young players.
It's interesting you say that, because, as we know, Jim Boylan was specifically asked, how do you worry at all about losing a guy who's only 19 years old when you do something like this? And he's like, no, because he's with me. In listening to Wendell Carter Jr.'s speak after the game, I mean, he did go into how I didn't bring anything to the game from an offensive standpoint, defensive standpoint, rebounding. I wasn't doing anything right. That may have been his way of kind of regurgitating what he had been told.
Right.
But at the same time, he when asked, do you feel like you've earned this? I mean, you're their pick. You're their mm-hmm. eighth, you know, overall pick. Do you feel like you've earned your right to try to battle through these tough times? And he said something to the effect of, any competitor wants to have the ability to fight through these things, but at the same time, I would have benched myself tonight. Again, strong words, but I think what he was most disappointed in, Kendall, which I found interesting, was not so much from a personal standpoint. He felt like he had let the team down. And when you talk about Magic Johnson going up to these guys, what guy was going up to him and saying, again, I think it all goes back to leader. There was a guy that stepped up. Is that all you're going to give us tonight?
Right.
And so I asked him, I said, who do you turn to on nights like this? And he mentioned his high school coach is who he bounces things off of. And I thought that was interesting, because I was thinking he'd pick somebody in the locker room
that, let you know
that he goes to, like a Robin Lopez. But it was his high school coach.
I thought he might have said Coach K, because that's, you know, from a discipline program, Coach K rules the roost there. And if he's going to take a guy out, there aren't going to be anybody second-guessing, why didn't you play more minutes? You know, he's going to let you know that you just didn't bring it tonight. So, you know, Carter is a very mature 19-year-old
who
came from a big-time college program, and he knows what's expected of elite players, you know, whether it's the college level or the NBA level. I think he can probably take the tough love from Jim Boylan. So I don't think it's going to be an issue with him. But now with the Bulls at 10-28, this becomes, well, it has for a while, it becomes about development. It's about Wendell Carter Jr. It's about Chandler Hutchison.
Right.
It's about some of the young guys on the roster taking step forward. It's about working chemistry between Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen. All these things have to play out over the final 40-some games of the year, and I think that's something that you can't lose sight of no matter what the score of the game is.
You can, and you know, a perfect example is when I was here with the Bulls. You know, I was playing really well, but when it came down to it and we understood now we were out of playoff contention, they decided to develop Kirk Heinrich, Jamal Crawford, and other players. So
Tyson and Eddie.
Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry. However, it came with a cost, because now Scottie Pippen and I were now relegated to spot minutes. You know, we didn't like it very much, but we understood what the process was. And, you know, I think that's where the Bulls are reaching that point right now.
I don't think there's going to be any more two-day breaks without practice.
No.
They did it before Christmas.
He
got
did
blown
say
out
that
by
yesterday
Minnesota.
Was optional. So apparently there were some guys getting shots up yesterday, and that would have been New Year's Day or whatever.
And they are practicing on Thursday, I think.
They are practicing, yes, with an NBA meeting to follow. So, yes, they have a full slate for after this game. I want to pose this question to you two, just because I don't want to sound uneducated here, but maybe you can decipher the coach speak in this for me.
Mm-hmm.
But when – Jim Boylan says after the game that he was disappointed in the pace and that they had poor pace early. He's the one slowing them down, but yet yelling at them to push it. And I'm confused. I'm confused watching. What is going on right now with what he is trying to get them to do?
Yeah, it's mixed signals, but
I mean, that's why I'm asking you. I mean,
it's kind of hard, but, you know, I think that in John Calipari was like this when I played for him. Push the basketball first to see if you have anything, then pull it out and run your offense.
Yeah.
But the initial thing you have to do is push the pace. I don't think that Chris Dunn pushes the pace. He kind of walks it up in slow, deliberate style, picking roll, but he never pushes and explores first. And then pull it out. That's what I think that Jim Brown
I just
wants.
Feel like they're stuck in the middle of not knowing how
they
to
really
do what
don't
you're
know
saying
yet what he
versus,
wants. Yeah, they
you
really
know.
Don't know yet what he wants. So.
And they run more with the second group because I think he realizes he's not going to get much in the half-court offense from that group. So they're trying to get transition baskets with guys like Shaq Harrison and Chandler Hutchinson who can run but aren't good outside shooters.
Yeah.
So maybe you can get some layups. And, you know, I jot down plays that I like throughout the course of the game. They had a couple of fast break baskets, and it was the second unit because they were pushing the ball almost out of necessity. Because you look at it on the floor, they got Robin Lopez, you know, who can score a little bit in the low post. You got Shaq Harrison and Hutchinson, who are not good outside shooters.
Right
now, Ryan Arcidiacono, whether it's his shoulder being hurt or whatever, he's not shooting the ball well at all. And then he turned to Antonio Blakeney with that second group. And Blakeney right now
– isn't afraid to shoot at all.
Seven shots in 7 minutes in the first
right,
half.
He's not shot.
And I think he was one of the guys Boylan was talking about when he said we can't have guys trying to win it all by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, going to one-on-one ball
definitely.
When you fall behind by 10, 15, 20 points.
But that's what he does. That's what he is.
Right.
He's not a guy that's going to go out and play team basketball. He's a guy that shoots the basketball like Vinnie Johnson. So you have to know – what you have. And, you know, I like Shaq Harrison. The reason why is because he's really not a strong outside shooter. So he knows I have to drive the basketball.
Right.
So that's why he pushes.
And he defends. Yeah.
And he defends. And he defends the whole court, you know, in the backcourt and in the front court. So I really like when he's in the game because he does exactly what I believe Boylan is trying to tell the rest of the players. Push it first. See, explore what you have and then run the offense later.
If we can rewind for a second to the second unit that Mark literally just laid out for us and also mentioned when the white flag was really being waved, Chris Felicio comes in as well as Campaign, and yet Jabari Parker is still sitting on the bench in this game. And I don't mean to bring up the elephant in the room, but give us some perspective as to what is going on in his mind right now, what the coaching staff might be thinking. I mean, what is going on?
I have no idea. You're last in offense. The guy was your second leading scorer, your leading rebounder, but you can't find a place for him when you're struggling to score the basketball. I don't know what's going on. I mean, it baffles me because I thought that Jabari Parker, yes, he did not come into camp in shape, but he played his way into shape. He was playing offensively. He was playing well. I thought defensively he had gotten better. So all those things indicate to me that a guy is putting in the work. He's going along as planned. He's working hard for you. So why can't you find a spot for him? I just don't know why.
Yeah, you lose by 28. He was the only guy who did not get any action. And the veteran scribe Sam Smith asked Jim Boylan at the end of his media session, if you're not going to play him, are you going to continue to dress him? And Boylan got kind of flustered and said, well, we'll just see about that.
Yeah.
And maybe that is what it comes to is that he just becomes inactive so that you don't have a guy in uniform who you have no intention of using. But that's something we're going to have to find out as the season progresses because Bobby Portis is getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only bit of good news from today.
Yeah, they missed
Bobby.
Yeah,
he said he's going to have
a full
contact practice Thursday. And the hope is they get him back maybe as the start of that West Coast trip.
Mm-hmm. And just, I mean.
And he's one of the leaders, even though he's a young
vocally,
guy.
Oh, yeah, vocally, definitely. He's certainly a galvanizing type guy. He's a guy that doesn't mind getting into faces and kind of getting rally guys up and stuff. But a little just inside perspective from the Parker, I kind of mentioned it to you guys earlier. It's gotten awkward, really, from us even observing it from a media standpoint because you're not seeing him really at shoot-arounds. After games, when we go in to talk to guys, he's coming in soaking wet from having basically just gone and done his own workout after after a game, and he's playing music kind of out loud on his headphones while the rest of us are trying to talk to other guys. It's like he's kind of removed himself from the team. So I know you've said as much as you can. It's just, it's bizarre. It's a really bizarre situation. And I can't imagine what's going through his head right now. But yes, from a positive standpoint.
And he's still a young kid. He's only 23 years old.
Yeah, and there's been reports that the Bulls are working with Jabari's agent, Mark Bartelstein, to try to find a trade that will be good for the Bulls and good for Jabari. But right now, the problem is that what we've heard is that the offers they're getting are for players that have 2 or 3 years left on their contract, and the Bulls want to maintain that salary cap flexibility heading into the summer. Now, we can debate whether or not they have a realistic chance at any of the top free agents, but they want to have that puncher's chance of maybe landing a guy who could really make a difference in this program.
Yeah, I mean, you got to maintain flexibility. That's what it's all about, you know, because say, for instance, Kevin Durant comes here
wants to work with Kelly Crawley.
I've been throwing a few texts his way, you know, right. Just letting him know. Post-game interviews with me again, right. Like how
Kelly
exciting.
We recruiting him and everything. And he comes here one night, just absolutely loves the city and falls in love with it.
And the media can recruit. It's not illegal.
Right?
Yeah, you never know. I mean,
give it on the DL.
But if it doesn't happen, I mean, where are you then?
Well, you know, there are some next level guys. I think a guy like Tobias Harris would be a really good addition at small forward. The problem is you'd have to max him out. And then we get into the debate, do you want to give a max contract to a guy who may not be worthy of that?
Right.
They all think they are.
We have to, or else we'd never be here, you know. Right. But Tobias Harris would be a nice piece to the puzzle here. However, I think he's staying in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, he's just playing too well under Doc Rivers.
Unless they tell him he's got to go because Durant and Kawhi are coming in.
That's true. That's the only way it happens. So maybe we win by indirectly signing those guys to the Clippers.
Well, you're listening to the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. If I can indulge for just a couple of minutes. Some folks out there might be curious about the game. I got a chance to call with Stacey King on Sunday, and it was just a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah, you did a great job.
You watch basketball all your life, and you listen to people doing their craft. And I remember as a young kid growing up in Milwaukee, we had a radio broadcaster by the name of Eddie Doucette, and he was so good, you know, he could bring the game to life. I remember lying in bed in my old transistor radio listening to Milwaukee
radio,
Bucks games with Lou Alcindor. Right? This is when they were really good, you know. They had a team that won the championship in 1971, and you know, you could just visualize it because he was so descriptive and so good with the way that he could describe the action that you could felt like you were watching it unfold right in front of you. Mm-hmm. Of course, television play-by-play is a little bit different, but, you know, for me, somebody who's loved the game all my life, to get a chance to do that was so special. And, you know, I'm just really thankful I got that opportunity. And I've known Stacey. I covered him when he played here with the Bulls. So I've known him forever, and he was great. And, I just, for all the people out there who said kind words on social media, I just want you to know I really appreciate it. It was a lifetime thrill for me, a career highlight. I don't know if I'll get a chance to do it again.
I hope you do.
But I loved every second of it, and I do really appreciate the kind words. So I know that we have so many great people who listen to our podcast, who follow us on social media. I just want to say thank you. It meant the world to me.
And Mark, you were great too. I mean, it was like you'd been doing it all season long, and you and Stacey, you could tell you had the relationship, and that's part of being a good team. You know, you doing play-by-play, Stacey doing the color, and it's, you know, it seemed like you guys were just back in studio. Like, we were in a conference room. You guys were
like
talking
Mookie
about
the Mookie Blaylock
game.
Setting him up in college.
Right.
Back in the Oklahoma days.
That's true.
I will say from getting to work with you for the past 5 years, Mark, for me it was emotional that you got to do this just in watching you, and I was cheering you on so much, and I was not that I have the right to be, but I was so proud of you. I just thought you nailed it. You were fantastic, and I think that a lot of people at home growing up the same way you did, listening to these games, there's so many people, no offense if you're one of them, but you sit there and you think, I can do that. I've watched games, I can do this. And there are so many little things, as you and I were discussing, that people have no idea. Some of the things you obstacles like not being able to see an entire part of the court just because of the way a game arena is set up.
Yeah.
Or nowadays there are so many advertisements or things that we call drops that we have to fit into broadcasts that Mark's trying to call the game and he's got someone in his ear being like, okay,
time to read number eight.
To read number eight. And you're trying to call this game, read number eight. And I just want, I mean, for so many different things and balls in the air, you balanced them so well and you made it absolutely seamless. I thought, like Kendall said, you act like you'd done this for years.
Well, I knew back in October that this was coming up, so it was kind of building up in my head as we got closer to it. And, you know, I was fine because I'm like, well, I know basketball. It'll be okay. But then all of a sudden, everybody I saw at the station or I'd see somebody in the street or an old friend would say, I'm going to make sure I'm watching. And I'm like, okay. Okay, now I'm getting a little bit nervous.
Right, you're a veteran.
Right. I'm definitely a veteran.
Nervous excitement.
You're a veteran,
so. That's what it was. Nervous excitement because, yeah.
So it was like you were playing in the Final Four.
It was my Super Bowl. It was
Super
my
Bowl, Final
Four.
Four,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
No question about it. And, you know, like I said, I thank the Bulls and our bosses at NBC Sports Chicago for giving me the chance to do that. Before we wrap things up, obviously the Bulls have to find a way to get back on track. As you mentioned in the postgame show, the great thing about the NBA, there's always another game coming up.
Yep.
And they've got home games coming up against Indiana and Brooklyn. Then they have a murderer's row on the West Coast. So they got to find a way to get a win in these next two games.
And what they need to do is come to the game, the very next game, and get off to a great start, unlike tonight. If they can do that, then I think that they can set the tone early and, you know, be in the game against the Indiana Pacers. Because as you mentioned before, earlier this year we had an opportunity to beat them, but unfortunately that didn't happen. So that's where I believe Zach can grow. Have this team ready when they get on the court. When is that, Friday night?
Friday night.
When they get on the court, have your team ready. Get if you're Chris Dunn, get the basketball to the guys that can score right away so that you guys get off to a good start. If they can do that, then I think that they can be in that game.
So were you a Pacers fan growing up in the Indianapolis area?
You know she was.
Oh, Mark,
Reggie
was
big
I
time?
Ever. Reggie yeah. Miller. So much so. If you'll
he flopped on every play.
Okay, listen. But he actually wasn't my favorite player, if you'll indulge me for like
sure,
30 seconds.
Absolutely.
I think you guys will find this. I may have told you this story, Kendall, but so much so. I watched that whole team. It was Mark Jackson. It was Antonio Davis, Dale Davis, Rick Smits, you know, the Duncan Dutchman. And Reggie Miller. Yes, I loved Reggie, but the guy I was going to basically be at 5'6", 5'7" for my high school basketball team was a point guard. So I watched a lot of Mark Jackson.
Uh-huh.
And true story, as an 11, 12-year-old in my first – I mean, we play in Indiana. You start playing the second you can have a ball in your hand, right? But my first organized game was third grade, I want to say. So you're like 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. And the coach doesn't know anything about you other than your height and throws out a ball and says, you know, go after it and let's see what we're working with here. And
Kelly must have been held back if she was 10 or 12.
What are you in third grade?
Eight or nine.
Eight or nine. Okay, I was 8 or 9. I'm sorry. All I knew is it was third grade, and we were sponsored by Marsh, the grocery store, and I remember it was light blue jerseys. Okay, anyway. Yeah, I wasn't held. That's bad. So 8 or 9. Okay, even better then. You guys will love this. So I have the ball in my hand. I'm coming across half court, and I turn around backwards and, like, back it in, right? Because that's what Mark Jackson did.
That's what he used to do.
And that's how I thought point guards were supposed to play.
Oh,
and
really?
I will never forget this coach
that's something else.
Walking over to my dad and saying, what the hell is she doing? And my dad was like, she watches a lot of Mark Jackson.
But it was effective, like, though, right?
I mean, no other girl out there knew what the heck I was doing. So, I mean, as an 8-year-old girl watching hoops in general, there probably weren't too many doing it, but I was. I
but
was
the
tomboy with my dad.
That's good
you
picked up on that, Kelly.
So, yeah, that's my Mark Jackson
because
story.
Kendall, the Pacers had the Bulls beat in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals in 98. They were up. What, like a dozen going into the fourth quarter?
Yeah, they did.
What
yeah.
happened, Kelly?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. It was devastating.
Even after all these years, it still hurts. So.
It does hurt.
Reggie pulled the New York Knicks. He choked.
That's the, like, yes. Right.
They choked
thing.
It.
Oh, gosh.
But see, that was the greatness of Jordan. He always found a way to rally his team. They didn't really play well for three quarters in that game.
Right.
And they found a way to win and, of course, go on to win their final championship.
And that's the difference between, you know, when LeBron says he's the greatest
thing,
of all, you know, that's the difference. I mean, Michael Jordan, and like you just said, Mark, he found a way. LeBron found a way when they were down 3-1.
Yeah, however, I give him credit for that. Yeah.
I give him credit for that. However, if Andrew Bogut not injured, if Draymond Green is not suspended.
Cost them a game, yeah. They might have won it in five.
Yeah, Golden State wins that series. Yeah. So that's why I can't give LeBron – I mean –
Well, he gave it to himself. You don't have to give
it
to
him.
He's not asking you to.
He already took it.
I mean, it was great that he was able to come back 3-1. It was great. It was fantastic. I enjoyed it. But you did not beat the team at full strength.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jordan beat teams at full strength all the time.
So how about this podcast? You got me and Kelly Curl almost going out of tears before we're done talking about the old days.
Yeah, it's great.
So we had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Happy New Year to everyone out there. We're hoping for better things ahead for the Chicago Bulls.
There will be. There will be.
Games coming up. So until next time, so long, everybody.
Your Bulls, your way, anywhere, anytime. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Stream games and get the best Bulls coverage in Chicago at your fingertips. Download the My Teams app today.